Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2018. I'm sorry about the delay. There were technical problems with the Endeavour. I don't I think something to do with this webcam, but we've sorted it out now. So here we go. Endeavour, welcome to Millennial, and please introduce yourself.
Well, thank you for having me on, Woz. It's a pleasure. Pretty much, I largely associate with the dissident right. I run a YouTube channel called Endeavor. I'm on Twitter at Royal Endeavor, and the main focus of my channel is a neo-reactionary thought or NRX. Generally, what I do is I do videos on various issues related to the modern world. A lot of the stuff that you discuss, and try to look at it in a and. Try to, I guess, try to come to answers through to kind of the clown world that we find ourselves in today.
All right. So when you say clown world, obviously you and I know what you mean by it, but I'm interested in how you would define that.
Well, I mean, it just seems weird. Like we're living in this era that that it feels like the world around us just has no confidence. It feels like the highest good of our civilization is hating itself. If it seems that everything's backwards, that the nations that our ancestors gave us, we seem to be the most hated group in them, and it seems like we're just lacking really any kind of self-confidence and any kind of like national identity, any kind of traditional values, any kind of healthy societal structures, even though we're advancing technologically. And I find that the best way to answer these questions and how did we get here, I find is NRX. That's why I generally focus on that with my channel.
Okay, so NRX is neo-reaction. Is that
Yes.
correct? Because I know that people define things, or were at one point defining things differently, so that neo-reaction was different from the reactosphere, which was different from NRX, I believe. And so you tell me, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be sort of tediously pedantic here, but can you define NRX for me? Because I
Well,
don't even know where the state of play is with that movement, to be honest.
I mean, I'd say it's really just part of the larger dissident, right? Like, I don't really consider myself any separate from, someone like yourself, or like, I might not associate with, I might not use the title alt-right because I know that one's kind of like worn out, but I largely associate with a lot of people in that crowd, and I think that it's really just kind of a school of thought within that. To define a neo-reactionary thought, it's a way of looking at the world through a pre-enlightenment thinking, and it tends to like look back beyond from before the Enlightenment. So from before thinkers like Rousseau, John Locke, John Stuart Mill, and really the foundation of the liberal society that we've lived in for the past well, certainly for the past 70 years, but then you could even look past. Further that past couple hundred years, and it seeks to answer some of these questions with kind of older ways of thinking. So I know that you've had a long history with
Oh
your
yeah,
accent.
but I haven't talked about it for so long, so I think it's sort of perhaps beneficial to have somebody fresh defining it for on the channel. Are you of the school that believes that the French Revolution was a huge turning point here, or are you not actually that interested because you think the fundamental changes were even earlier than that?
Well, I definitely think that the French Revolution was one of the kick off, the starting points. It was, I'd say it starts with around the Enlightenment. It starts with the idea that, the fundamental idea of liberalism is that, people are born, they're the, born these good creatures, and really what the highest good is just to be as free and as equal as po as well, not necessarily as equal as possible in the sense of communism, but essentially that basically the Rousseauian notion that man is born free but everywhere he's in chains, and that it kind of sees that tearing down the kind of authority structures around us is the way to reach a kind of higher liberation. And as we've done that over the past since the French Revolution, it kind of creates the narrative of Whig history that we're supposedly progressing towards a more free, more equal, better society. But from the reactionary standpoint, that's actually a society that's decaying, and we're actually losing a lot of the structure and a lot of the foundations that really got us to where we are. And I think that that the world we see ourselves in, with, you know, all the anti-white rhetoric, the mass immigration, the lack of morality and stuff like that, I find that's kind of like it reaching, you know, it reaching like one of its final stages, kind of.
So it's not just a matter of, well, I mean, I think that the sort of interesting point to make here is that eventually it's not just that structures are lost, but that the remaining core begins to destroy itself.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So we're now in a situation where, as you said at the beginning, Western civilization is sort of in love with hating itself.
Mm-hmm.
Addicted to that. And I think that's true. I think you can see it in many ways. Definitely. Well, I mean, you can certainly see it in the racial sense. I think it's sort of been, Western civilization has been personified in white people who are trained to hate themselves. And that seems to go, but I mean, I'm guessing that you would think that is self-directed almost. It's not a matter of social programming or whatever. White people are voluntarily, there's something deep going on that makes them hate themselves.
Well, I think that it is definitely a lot to do with programming, because, you know, there's definitely the what Moldbug called the cathedral, kind of the consensus of the intelligentsia that holds this one belief that really keeps pushing us in a more progressive direction. That's really what's kind of driving it. And I find that the reason that it's kind of getting out of hand right now is that the ideas of liberalism and the ideas of the Enlightenment really were based on false notions, on incorrect views of humanity and incorrect views of human nature, of authority, of culture, and just the way that society works. And I find that, like, now that we've kind of lost a lot of the framework in things like Christianity, you know, strong national identity, and stuff like that, and that's when it's really starting to devour itself.
Yeah, it's certainly a very dramatic and complicated phenomenon that's playing out one way or the other, and I'm not even going to volunteer my own thoughts on this. I really feel that I've sort of said everything that I can say about it, and at this point my best course of action is to listen to other people talking about it and you know, do my own new research before I make any new pronouncements about it, because it is endlessly complicated. So tell people about your channel.
Well, so my channel, I pretty much, it's pretty much similar to any dissident right channel. I try to like find certain aspects of politics in the present day and try to kind of explain them through either historical context or just, through culture or, certain things like that. So for instance, I made a video on, how liberalism destroys culture. And the thesis of that video was that liberalism tends to see that it's a good thing for people to be as free as possible, really. And a lot of what makes a culture unique is the restrictions that it places upon people. Like, for instance, Victorian England was such a unique place, but it had such like a rigid hierarchy. It had social norms. You know, you're expected to be an Anglican. You're expected to hold like a man was supposed to hold this gentlemanly demeanor, you know, and it was exclusive, of course. You know, only an Englishman at that time was considered to be English, and it was a rigid kind of social order, but it was kind of those boundaries that they set up. That's what kind of made it unique. And as these cultures have liberalized, they've all kind of merged into one. That, you know, is there really that much of a difference today between, say, Canadian culture, American culture, British, German, French? It kind of, they all just seem to be going in the direction of liberalization, really.
Yeah, global homogeneity. Or
yeah, the global homogeneity. Global homo.
that as well, yeah. So, do you make videos? Because I know that I've seen one of your videos, several of your videos, but I became aware of your channel through one particular video. But unfortunately, I've talked to so many people already on Millennial that I've forgotten what it was about. Can you remind me?
Was it the Sean and Jen response?
Oh, yes, that was it. Yes.
Yeah.
It was a response to some stupid video that, and I couldn't believe how stupid it was. I remember trying to watch it, and I think I switched off after 2 or 3 minutes. because I couldn't believe how stupid his video was. And then you made a response video dealing with his stupidity. You see, they've got a bigger channel than mine. I think they're about 80K, Sean and Jen. And so I assumed that this video they'd done about, I can't even remember what it was about.
It was about the Great Replacement.
Oh, that was it, yes, because they were saying that it's not... God. Yeah, so I assumed that it would be fairly intelligent because they've got a big channel. And it was cretin, it was moronic. One of the things he said was that whites aren't going extinct because... because the genes will remain in the gene pool, even if they're no longer the people are no longer white, your genes will remain. That was one stupid thing. And then he also said that it doesn't matter. It was something about the date. Like, well, actually, it's not going to happen in 2050. It's probably actually going to happen about 100 years after that. So what are you worrying about? That was the gist of what it's like. Are you fucking kidding me? So because it's going to happen 100 years later, it's okay.
Well, not only that, but he seems to ping pong back and forth between saying it's not real, then, well, it is real, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's like, well, white British people, for example. Oh, well, they're not going to go extinct, but anyone can be one, so it doesn't matter. And then and then it also will be like, well, you know, you're horrible if you even consider this. So it's the constant, like, it's really funny because in Europe today they're still saying that it's a conspiracy, whereas in Canada they're saying yes, it's going to happen, but diversity is our strength and it's great and it won't be that bad and you're racist if you don't want it. And in America they're just saying, yeah, it's going to happen, it's going to be horrible for you, but you're horrible and you deserve it, really.
Yeah Well, I mean, we're starting to get that in Europe as well. This is happening, and I don't know if I've seen establishment figures actually admitting that whites are going to be literally dispossessed, they're going to be outnumbered. I don't know if I've heard that yet, but they certainly say that, you know, diversity is there is no reason to worry about such a prospect coming to pass. It's not even on the radar, because it wouldn't make any difference because we're all the same. Now that's the general thinking that I'm hearing just now, at least. But I know that in America, and it sounds like in Canada as well, they've gone beyond that already to this is happening and it is going to be bad for you. And you deserve it. And I've even seen one article. I think the art journalist was called Joel Stein or something like that. And he said that even when whites are outnumbered, even when they're a minority, they will still continue to benefit from the legacy of white privilege. So even then, the demonization of them must not be stepped down. You know, it must be maintained. Because otherwise, whites, even as a minority, will continue to benefit from white privilege and whatever. So it's like they're preparing the ground for, you know, even when we get to the point where white Americans are outnumbered, they can still be abused.
Yeah, and I find that the reason that I'm so interested in NRX is because in neo-reaction is because I find that it both explains a lot of the driving force behind this.
But before we get onto that, just I've remembered one more stupid thing that Sean said in that video, which again just amazed me. And what he said was that it was about in Britain. Hold on a second, let me get this right.
Oh, that the refugees would help you find.
I've remembered. Well, that's another thing. What he said was, even when whites pass below 50%, they'll still be the biggest minority. They'll be a minority because they won't be a majority anymore, but they'll still be the biggest minority. So what are you worrying about? As if 20 years beyond that will still be the case. Of course it won't be the case. And even if it didn't get any worse than that, why is it something that we should be okay about that we've lost the majority in our own fucking homeland? Yeah. The lack of thought involved here is really staggering. The utter stupidity. I was actually really disgusted and angry with him for inflicting this video on the public, But of course, the funny thing is, though, didn't bother about it at all.
He mentions that in the video that he lives in Liverpool, and I looked at the demographics, and it's like over 90% white.
Well, Liverpool is, because it's one of the northern cities, but it's still, I know that there are bits of it that are, you know, heavily Islamified. But yeah, that's just stupid. And what was the other thing that you remembered that he'd said?
Britain, that it won't be the end of tradition because during World War II, they brought in Polish refugees and they helped fight the war. Oh, it was just ridiculous.
It's just totally clutching at straws. That's just nonsense.
Well, I mean, because where I live, it's actually been like that for decades now, because I'm from Toronto. And basically when I was in elementary school, I was already in the minority at that point.
God, I'm sorry.
We haven't had things like Rotherham yet, because like, you know, a lot of them are from East Asia. So like, you know, they'll still have like high incomes and stuff. So, I mean, like, you know, they don't really increase the crime, but at the same time, like you still lose the original culture though.
Yes, of course you do. And especially when there's a racial dimension to it, because even if they're capable of maintaining the white culture, they're not motivated to. There's no real reason for them to do so. You know, the call of their ancestral culture is too strong. At any rate, they're certainly not going to maintain it precisely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's just obvious.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that wasn't actually really what got me started politically, but I think looking back on it, it definitely influenced my views back in the day, even though it was kind of subconsciously. I think that the original thing really was just that lack of culture, because, you know, you often hear the story that someone says, well, they were liberal when they were young, then they were libertarian, then, you know, onto being like either alt-right or whatever. I think that I was pretty much bound to become, you know, dissident right ever since I was young, because my real frustration with the world was that it really seemed to lack any kind of culture that, you know, I could take pride in, because, you know, it started off with reading all these great stories from history, reading about the British Empire, reading about Canada and Europe. My interest in history came from my boyhood hero. He was actually he actually had fought for the Polish resistance in World War II. And just like listening to all these stories and just all this amazing stuff. And I really found that the modern world was just, it was just dry in comparison, because we really didn't have that. We didn't really have the same things to do, because I'm not that I say, well, I want to have a war, but because I'm against war, but at least though, then they were doing things, you know? So they actually had like something higher that they're working towards. They actually had goals that they were fighting for. And, you know, I feel Canada in its early days, it was this nation that was settled by English and French settlers who had crossed the Atlantic. And, you know, there was a sense back in, say, and I'm actually making a video about this soon, but there was a sense back in, you know, the early 20th century and 19th century that, you know, they had this massive frontier to go and conquer, and they were going off and spreading their civilization, and they were part of this larger empire, and they just had like so much purpose, and they just had so much to do. And I just found that the modern world didn't really have any of that. And that was kind of what kind of at least set me toward the right to begin with, because it was like, well, how do we go from being these, you know, these like farmers, these lumberjacks, these manly guys that conquered this huge frontier, to being these, you know, like soy boys who celebrate like, you know, feminism and multiculturalism and stuff like that. And oh, another thing I'd like to point out though is the guy that I had mentioned, the Polish war veteran, he's actually still alive today, and he's pretty old, but you know, the left calls like, you know, they call people like you and I Nazis and stuff, but this guy agrees with me. He says that Germany's ruining Europe again through the refugee crisis. So, and this guy fought the Nazis, and he agrees with us.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's Germany who's doing this. That was, I mean, that the particular decision taken by Angela Merkel in September 2015 is obviously insane, and it certainly did damage other European countries as well. But I don't think that it would be fair to blame this on Germany. It's a complex question because, well, I mean, the Germans have been trained, really indoctrinated with self-hatred for 70 years. And so, you know, you can almost understand why they would do something like this. But at the same time, I don't think they're certainly not the only ones guilty of it. I mean, the Swedes, the Brits, yeah. The French, you know, they all have the same mentality. I think it's just that with the Germans, it's a wee bit more widespread. I think the public buy it more in Germany, whereas in other countries, it tends to be the elites who really buy into the whole, you know, diversity, mass immigration bollocks. So that's what I would say about that.
But it is unfair to just blame it on Germany, though. But it does seem to be the same in every country because, you know, they'll find anything to guilt you on. Like in Canada, for instance, the big thing that they push is the bad conditions in the schools that the natives attended in the early 20th century, that like some of them died of disease, some of them might have been abused, and they play that up as if it's like, you know, as if, you know, we had committed the Holocaust.
So therefore Canada needs to be destroyed.
Therefore it's an illegitimate country. And then it justifies basically tearing down the entire
country. I mean, I think we would all agree that it's not right. It's not nice for school children to die and a particular ethnic group to be maltreated by a society. Fine. We can all agree on that, but it doesn't mean that that society should be destroyed. The main ethnic group is of no worth, or that the main ethnic group doesn't exist, which is what's claimed about, you know, all of us. And in the same way that whatever you think about the Holocaust, let's assume that the worst of it is true. 6 million Jews gassed. Well, okay, that's dreadful, but it doesn't mean that the Germans need to be wiped out or that they deserve to be wiped out. You know, even in the worst case scenario, they still don't deserve to be, you know, to go extinct. So, but that is the assumption. And it's weird, like, because no one's ever explicit about it. No one ever says, you did this, your ancestors did this, and so you're now going to go extinct and you deserve it. I wish they would just say, yeah, we're going to wipe you out because of a historical grievance, because I think that would bring it home to people. Instead, it's said in a sort of roundabout way, really sort of mealy-mouthed and complicated, which I think enables people to sort of absorb the guilt and the shame and accept the fate, but without actually consciously realizing the fate and, or rather, how it's being justified.
Yeah. You know, I find that they have like an ulterior motive. It was really what the motive is to just essentially break down, to demoralize the population, just break them down and really just turn everyone into these consumers, really. So turn the entire world into this shopping mall. And I think that that's just the justification that they're using to do it. Like, you know, I bet you anything, if they try the same thing in East Asia, 10, 20 years from now, they're going to bring up the Japan in World War II or South Korea during the Korean War. I mean, you know, they'll find pretty much anything. I think that, I find that one of the biggest problems is that we can't really justify the preservation of our own cultures and our own nations under the lens of liberalism, though, because when liberalism is separated from any like foundation, then the entire purpose of it is to just turn people into these consumers. It's to just break down all tradition, all culture, and, you know, make everyone as free as possible and as wealthy as possible, and that's apparently all they need. And that's why we have such a hard time really even justifying preventing any of this stuff.
Well, it's weird, you know, as someone just pointed out in a super chat, which I think is very relevant, actually, the left were always mad about the racial absorption of Australian Aboriginals, yet they would gleefully cheer on the same fate for whites by others, like they are being racially absorbed into another population. That's true, and this is the point. We can't justify, we don't have the vocabulary or whatever to justify our own racial survival. Yet we implicitly accept that all other races should survive. It's just that somehow there's this unique exception for white people. Only whites, only the European race is exempted from the future. I mean, why? Yeah. As soon as you look at it in these terms, it's not complicated. It's not. It's actually embarrassingly simple and annoyingly simple. We are simply under attack, a sort of psychological attack. We've been given a load of bullshit rationalizations as to why we should accept this, why it's not happening to us, why it can't be happening to us because we don't exist, and etc. All of this bollocks, nonsense, yeah. And yet it never seems to occur to us. Well, hold on. Why is it completely different for every other people?
Well, I find that it's based on a lot of just incorrect notions and about human nature. Like one of them being that essentially it doesn't matter. You just need to give someone like the right education. You just need to integrate them properly. You know, you just need to basically just give someone the right upbringing, and then they're essentially interchangeable. And you know, I think that a lot of the rhetoric that we're getting right now, a lot of that's from like the fact that notion just isn't coming true, you know, because what you know, a lot of progressives will say is that, well, you know, there's they'll say it's that the differences are because of institutional racism, because, you know, they could like the argument that they used, say, back in the 60s was that, well, it's because of discrimination. It's because of things like segregation or whatever. And, you know, that was changed. But then the situation didn't change, and that, yes, we haven't really, you know, made people all these interchangeable cogs yet. And, you know, the conclusion is either that, A, that the blank slate assumption is either incorrect. That's the one that, you know, people in our spheres are saying. Or then the other assumption is that, well, it's that just that our society is still, there's just this inherent discrimination that's in us that is causing other groups to not be able to be as prosperous within our nations as we are.
And the irony is that whichever of those two is the true answer, the obvious solution is for them to leave our countries.
Yeah, I mean,
if it's not working out, then it's not working out, you know.
Well, I mean, it's difficult to say, you know. I think that a lot of these problems that that we're facing, I think so many of them could be solved if it weren't under this liberal democratic system of you know, the zero sum game of power where everyone's assumed to be this interchangeable cog. Because I mean, you know, I think of some states, like say in the Middle East, like the UAE or Qatar. You know, these ones, they're like, the Arabs are actually a minority in these states, but the Arab population maintains political, cultural, and economic dominance over these areas. And, you know, it basically, it's their way or the highway. And if not, you'd have to be kicked out if you weren't accepting their rule. And, you know, I find that, because it's a bit of a difficult situation in Canada and the US, I do kind of find that the demographic situation is irreversible. But I don't necessarily think that that means that we have no future, because because I find a lot of these problems is just from this blank slate assumption that, you know, if we just work it hard enough, we'll make everyone interchangeable. And if we actually entertained, this is why I am so interested in reactionary thought. If we entertained other forms of government and other other conceptions of just how human nature works, I think we can find a way to avoid, you know, just the wiping out of our cultures and, you know, a disaster in the future for future descendants.
Well, I hope so. It just feels to me like it's far too late for that now. It's like 50 years too late at this stage. That's the way it feels to me. I think that conflict is just unavoidable now. And I've thought that for a long time, actually. Are you still quite hopeful?
Well, I mean, I think that it's solvable. I think that if everyone actually made some acknowledgement that, you know, people are different and, you know, they tend to prefer being around their own. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean you hate others. but just loving your own does not, is just perfectly natural. If we, took everyone out of this kind of zero sum game of power where, you know, essentially what is when it becomes a multicultural society, everyone's grappling over seats in parliament to essentially advance their own group interests very often. I have to think that there's some kind of arrangement that you could come to that would make it work. It's just, I think that probably the biggest fear is that I don't think anyone on the left would accept that, because you have to understand what other groups are gaining from it. Because when you look at identity politics from the left, the real motive is extraction of wealth. You can see that in the UK with the Muslim population voting for the Labour Party. You can see that in the United States with the Black and Hispanic populations overwhelmingly vote for the Democrat Party. The goal is to essentially take wealth from the white population, and that's why they support the policies they do. And that the reason that the thing that would make conflict inevitable is I don't think that the left would be willing to accept a situation where we just kind of said, we can figure this out if we just did things a bit different, because, you know, people on the left are really gaining from it, because, you know, they just have to wait, and then they have the demographics will just give them the win.
The irony is that their victory will be entirely Pyrrhic, because these minorities will not need the left. Once they are numerous enough, prevalent enough, whatever, in society, that the old white left is going to be completely, it's just amazing. You know, they're destroying their own societies, and they seem to be blind to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that they're kind of the thing that that blackpills me the most. You know, I felt that I feel like, you know, if Canada was even if we were further down the road, if it was only like, you know, if the founding stock of Canada was down to like, you know, 30 or 40%, but we were like, you know, arm in arm, like ready to like stand up for ourselves and, you know, preserve, you know, our nation. I mean, I wouldn't be as blackpilled, but, you know, it's just the treason from people like Justin Trudeau and these shit libs that they just don't get it, you know. And it's funny because what other group in history really has like had this much contempt for their own, for, you know, their, not their own ancestors and their own posterity. I mean, it's really quite astounding. And
well, I mean, it's 70 years of brainwashing to bring us to the point where we believe that our ancestors, that we are not the custodians of anything, and so we can just give what our ancestors built away to everyone. Everyone is entitled to what our ancestors built and achieved, because there is no group, there is no story. But the trouble is that every other group doesn't believe that. This is the grim situation that we're dealing with, and this is why I think that there are numerous things that I'm starting to think a sort of departure from things I've said before, and one of them is that I think, for example, racial IQ differences, I think that we should stop pushing that stuff, because I don't think it's of any interest. I think to the majority of whites, I think they already know it deep down anyway, and they don't care. But I think that what they would care, or what they could be made to care about, is white identity. And I think that that would override everything else. You know, if you care about your ethnic group, you don't care about whether some other ethnic group is more or less intelligent than them.
Because it really shouldn't matter. Because, I mean, you know, first of all, you're never gonna get that through the, you know, scientific community. The left will just deny it. I mean, they already deny that gender exists. So, but I mean,
it's becoming insane though at this point. That I just read that in Britain, a particular city in Britain, and in a particular city in America, I can't remember which ones, but literally like, on the same day or 2 days apart, the same policy was announced in these two cities. That they're going to start telling wee little boys that they can have periods too.
Yeah,
this is how insane the left is actually becoming.
So yeah,
I mean, that the public are going to start to be desperate to be rescued from this utter insanity that's unfolding.
Yeah, I mean, it's my hope that, you know, One thing that does give me kind of hope is that, you know, progressivism and just like the culture that comes with it, just like this individualistic, nihilistic, do whatever you want, you know, not take anything sacred. I just feel that it's anti-human. Like, I don't think that people naturally want that. I think that, you know, people do naturally want to just, you know, be proud of who they are. They want to fit into a national context. I feel that, you know, if it weren't for all, you know, all these, this kind of brainwashing, I think that you probably wouldn't have things like, you know, this, gender nonsense. I have to think that like a lot of the stuff, it's so like anti-human that, it can't last forever. I don't think it will. But you know, I think that one of the things that I do have to remember though, is that, you know, but before I think I was kind of black pilled before I was red pilled, and I might be a little bit less black. I'm a lot more white pilled now because, you know, thinking back on my kind of political journey, before I really figured all this stuff out, I had actually thought that, you know, the Francis Fukuyama end of history, that, you know, we're going to like turn the world into the shopping market. I kind of thought that was true. I kind of thought, you know, we were going to like create this, society where this post scarcity society where, you know, there's no, nothing to, that there's no need for conflict. There's no need for, really to have a higher purpose to fight for. And, you know, that to me would be the biggest black pill of all, if that came true. So, you know, in some ways that I think that the liberal world order not lasting that a lot of this stuff, it still does matter. I think that for me is a white pill that, you know,
they're having to work very hard to make people not care about this stuff, you know, like national identity, racial identity, men and women, male and female. It requires constant indoctrination to prevent people from caring about this stuff. So it obviously is very natural to most people. I mean, most people are naturally tribal. Tribalistic. I don't know what word people would use for this, but it's just, it's extremely natural. Even for liberals. I mean, even for people who are, I've forgotten the terminology, like trait openness or whatever the terminology is. Even for them, they still want home. They still want something that they can use as a home base, you know, to spring off and explore stuff from. So I think it's it requires a huge amount of effort to maintain this madness.
I find that in Canada in particular, they've really worked hard on the you know, forgetting our own history. Like, for instance, you'll have a lot of Canadians today that they don't know what the Statute of Westminster was. They don't know what they don't know what the British Empire was. They pretty much all they know is, well, one part of Canada speaks French, one part speaks English, and it became a country in 1867, and that's about it. And it's really just amazing how over the course of 50 years, I think you had made this point in another video, is that not only is that nation not there anymore, but they'll deny that that nation ever existed to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't quite believe the audacity that we see, you know, and they'll do that with, I was saying in the previous one, they'll do this with ethnic groups, even, you know, that are thousands of years old.
Yeah. Amazing. I do feel like a lot of people, if they actually had access to, were offered a kind of cultural identity beyond just the consumption that they've been given, I have to feel like more people would actually stand up and fight. I mean, like, I don't generally like to talk about, say, like white identity. I think it's a bit more specific than that. I think it's there's different ones for different nations, but the fact of the matter is that they're all of European descent, and that's kind of an integral part of that. So, you know, in the context of Canada, the Anglo-Canadians, they're from places like Ireland, Scotland, England, Wales, and even some other European countries have kind of absorbed into that. And I think that's kind of a unique group in its own. And I do think that, say, the Quebecois are a unique group of their own too. And I don't think that that necessarily makes them interchangeable with other European nationalities. But I do think that yes, an integral part of that is definitely that you're from Europe, because you know a lot of that ethos is that your ancestors traveled across the ocean from Britain to settle Canada, and other groups don't have that same kind of history to identify with, so you're probably not really going to get that.
No, indeed. I think that it does seem to me that this is untenable. That what we're dealing with just now does seem like a sort of apex, because I actually can't imagine how it could get much worse. I mean, there is the paedophile thing, that leftists actually promoting paedophilia, and I think that actually is happening. I doubted it. I really doubted that they would go that far, but I think we're seeing this now. I mean, there's Desmond, the drag queen. He's like 10 years old. I mean, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go for, because it's weird how it's always about sex. You know, that so much of this is rests on sexual liberation of one kind, and then another kind, and then another kind. And it's possible that they'll go for necrophilia. Possible. I don't know. But I can't really imagine how we could get much more atomized than we are already. So maybe I'm naive. I expect the live chat will be telling me that it could get a lot worse than it is. But anyway, and so yes, that's the one, Dusan, that's the one I'm talking about. This Desmond, this kid in a New York gay bar, he dances semi-naked for money. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So there you are. It feels to me like this is a sort of apex period. This is like Weimar. And something is going to happen in the next 10 years to arrest it, which is probably going to cause all sorts of... it's not going to be pleasant.
I think you're kind of seeing the center collapse, and that, you know, someone can't really even be center ground anymore. Like, you know, if you're either on board with that or you're far right, pretty much. And I mean, we can even see that with like all these people that, you know, to any of us would be considered just a pretty moderate person. But then, you know, Patreon or Twitter or something says, well, far right figure kicked off of Patreon, you know. So yeah, I mean, the center definitely isn't going to last, but you know, I don't know. I have to think that it can't go on forever. I don't know what's going to come after that, but I have to think that, like, you know, if we weren't really just kind of forcing this egalitarian nonsense so hard, I have to think that, you know, you could find a way to prevent, you know, some kind of catastrophe.
Well, perhaps. Or maybe, you know, we can't avoid catastrophe and, you know, that's not the end of the world. I don't know. I mean, it looks like history is, you know, punctuated by periods of incredible strife, and people survive. People, you know, the show goes on. I mean, I don't mean to trivialize things here, but, you know, I don't know. I don't think that we should bank on it being peaceful, put it that way.
Oh yeah, I definitely do. I'm not sold on this coming apart being peaceful, but I have to think that there is a way to do it peacefully, but there is a way to kind of get this all sorted out and kind of restore kind of a healthy way of life and kind of healthy nations and really just kind of a future. I think there's definitely a way to restore it. But will it happen peacefully? Well, that remains to be seen. I hope it does.
Yeah, indeed. Let me just check for super chats, because there were a few and I don't want to forget them. Hold on a second. Right. Okay. Okay. Now we've got four. Endeavor, what's your opinion on using the riches of Africa for the West's benefit? Build roads and hospitals in exchange for export rights, and a ban on migration to the West.
Well, I don't know. I don't see that happening anytime soon. I personally would. I think we have our own problems to work with. We have our own problems to solve here. I mean, I guess that's kind of like what we did back in the 1880s, colonization. I mean, you know, maybe at the time it worked out well, but because, you know, leftists will say, like, you know, colonial oppression, this, that. But I mean, if we actually look at it, it did make Africa better. But I don't know. I'd say that we just have to stop the bleeding in our own countries. Because why do we even need to do that to stop migration? We can stop migration by just closing the damn border.
Yeah, it should be a lot easier. It should be simpler than we're making it, or than our elites are making it. I agree. Okay, the next one is the left were always mad about the race. Yeah, we dealt with that earlier. IQ inequalities are important to point out as a defense against leftist intersectionality opposition. In other words, that we can shut down the left claiming that we're oppressing people by pointing out that these people have lower average IQ than us. That's true. That's true. I just think that it seems to me that, again, that is going to be small fry. It's going to be sort of overridden by ethnic identity reemerging. That's how it seems to me, because, and again, maybe I'm being too optimistic there, but I think that if it's going to become untenable, if every other group can have racial identity but we can't, that doesn't make sense. And I think that the left, who are obsessed with fairness, a lot of them are going to realize this pretty soon. I think.
Well, I mean, the reason I think with race realism, I mean, it might be a good red pill for like a individual person, but I really don't think you're going to be able to have a movement based on it, because, you know, first of all, the people in control of the academy right now, they're just going to shut it down immediately. And secondly, I think that, I don't know, for me, it kind of misses the point in many ways. It's that, you know, for instance, could immigration from, say, an East Asian country help our economy? Well, maybe it will help our economy. And, you know, maybe in an ideal situation, we take some. But at the same time, does that mean that, you know, we would want to replace our entire country with that because maybe the economy might improve? No, I don't think it is. I think that the problem is that we're really missing something that's a lot more abstract, something that's a lot more immaterial. And I really don't see that as kind of a winning strategy.
Yeah. Tiamat has pointed out, the left isn't obsessed with fairness. They're obsessed with equality. Fairness recognizes inequality. Yeah, that's true. But the point is that there is unequal treatment. That's what I meant when I said that they're obsessed with fairness. If blacks and browns are allowed to be ethnic identity and so on, well, equality would dictate that whites should be allowed the same thing. But I recognize that I used the wrong word there, and you're right. It is an important distinction. Okay, the other one is, Dractonus has said that in Warrington, 6-year-olds were being asked at school to write gay love letters. And you can apparently Google it, and it's in the newspapers. So that's to do with the insanity that we're all living with just now. So, wow, it's amazing. Anyway, okay, well, let's leave it at that. So, Endeavor, any last things to say?
Big thanks for having me on. You know, I'm just past my 1 year on YouTube. 2 years ago, I was kind of this disgruntled college student who found some anti-SJW videos on YouTube and found them entertaining. A year ago, I basically had become a near reactionary and was watching Melanie Yule, and here I am now on Melanie Yule. This is kind of the dissident right Christmas party. So it's a big pleasure to be on, and it's quite the marathon that you're running. So, you know, you're a warrior, Woes. You're a hell of a guy. Thanks for having me on. Truth is on our side.
Thank you very much. And yes, it certainly is. I agree. All right. Well, that was Endeavor. Thank you for taking part in Millennial. And next, in about 20 minutes, I'll be back with JF to talk about his book. So I will see you then. Bye for now.